using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Influence Change at Work show for Wednesday, September 16th, 2015. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence change at Enclaria. Another example is coming up next week, I'm presenting a webinar called 10 Ways Change Gets Stuck at Work.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Which is hosted by the Northwestern University Alumni Association, but it's open to the public. So you can find more information about that and other upcoming webinars, workshops, and radio episodes at enclaria.com/events. Today my guest is Beth Banks Cohn, who is here to discuss how we need to beware of bad change management. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Beth Banks Cohn is the founder and president of ADRA Change Architects, a consulting firm dedicated to helping individuals and organizations reach their full business potential. With over 20 years of business experience and a varied education, which includes a master's degree in human resource education and an MA in organization development, plus a PhD in human and organizational systems, Beth brings a special blend of business practicality and human psychology to her work. For the better part of two decades, Beth worked for Johnson & Johnson and consulted domestically and internationally with a wide range of disciplines, including sales and marketing, information technology, human resources, and manufacturing. In her consulting practice, she continues this work and consults to a wide range of businesses, including pharmaceutical, software, and retail. She is a recognized expert in change management and leadership, as well as corporate culture. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Heather. It's so nice to be here with you today.
Thank you. So in a nutshell, you know, most people who listen to this show probably know what we're talking about by change management, but just to level set, wanted to ask the question, you know, what do we mean by change management and what is it about it that has a potential to go bad?
So I know most people listening today have their definition of change management, so I'll just give you mine. So my definition is helping an organization productively manage through a change they've chosen to make. And by productively manage, I mean to take advantage of the opportunities the change presents on your way to increased profitability. So that's
great.
My definition, and hopefully it jives with yours and everyone else's definition.
Sure.
And so what could be bad about that? Well, there are a lot of things that could be bad about that. One is, of course, that a company doesn't pay enough attention to the changes and their impact. I call that, because even though they're essentially ignoring change management, I still consider that some change management as in bad. I call that the shut up and get back to work model. You just want people to shut up and get back to work after they make the change. There's another way you can think of change management being bad is that a company hires a consultant who's giving them, for lack of a better term, misguided advice. So I call that the buzzword model. So these are people that come in and they just use a lot of buzzwords and like change agent or transformation catalyst or a change disruptor. You know, so they have all the buzzwords down, but they may or may not be able to really help you in the way that you need to manage through the change. And I would say the the third model I call the bait and switch model, and that's where you hire a company and you think you're hiring a change expert to do the work, but actually the person that shows up to do the work is a junior, really junior person who knows little more than the methodology that they've been taught. So those are my three sort of top models: shut up and get back to work model, the buzzword model, and the bait and switch model, in the ways that change can go bad.
Okay, great. And I've seen all of those.
Yes, and sadly, my guess is that many people have seen all of them.
Yeah,
it is unfortunate because it, you know, for me, I guess I know that change can be managed, it can be handled really, really well, and contribute a huge amount to the success of a project. And it really doesn't have to be this way, any of those ways, but it does happen.
So then what is the danger of bad change management?
Well, I think for me, the biggest danger is that the project fails to meet its goals. And sometimes the stakes of those projects are pretty high, right? So, you know, you're looking for a, you know, $20 million lift in your business by implementing this change, or you're looking to take, you know, millions of dollars out of your product flow because you're making these changes. And so the numerical amounts are quite high, and so the stakes are quite high. And failing to do that means that you're not getting that profitability lift, or you're not getting that cost savings. And for some companies, these are critical things because they may not be able to exist in the future without making those changes and having them be successful. So I think for me, that's the biggest danger, is that the project really fails to meet its goals. And then I think there's some sort of side things that can happen,
mm-hmm.
Mostly around the people. So what I have seen is that when change is handled badly, there's a loss of people, because sometimes people do have a choice and they can go somewhere else to work, or they can choose to work somewhere else, and they don't want to be in a place that's really implementing changes that are not going well, that causes a lot of angst, causes a lot of people to work a lot, causes people to be unhappy, and so people leave. So that's a possibility. Another possibility is that morale plummets. So people don't leave, but their morale is terrible, and when your morale is terrible, your productivity is terrible. So not only are you failing to meet your project goals, but your productivity goes through the bottom because your people are not coming to work and bringing their whole selves. They're not working all of that time that you're paying them to work because their minds and their thoughts are occupied with how the change is not going well. So those are some of the dangers. And then my biggest danger, which I do talk about a little bit in my first book called Change Smart, is that change handled badly is never over, meaning that even though the change is over, in that maybe it's okay, we're done with that change and we're moving on to something else, people carry around all of the bad feelings about that change into their work every day, but also into the next change, so that the next time you try to make a change, even if this time you're trying to do everything right, people are still carrying around that baggage from the last change, and that makes making changes difficult. And in today's environment, where we have companies that really do need to change early and often, as I say, you know, being able to change and make changes in an organization is critically important. And so not being able to do that because people are carrying around baggage from the last change is really unfortunate.
Absolutely.
So I'd completely depressed you now.
No, because we're going to talk about good change management eventually.
Yeah.
But first, what are some of the red flags that people should be watching out for? How do you know that you might be getting bad change management or doing bad change management?
Well, I think there's a lot of different things. First, I'll talk about if you're being a a consumer of a consultant who's going to come in and do this for you, or a consulting company that's going to do this for you. So I think for me, some of the red flags around that are lack of actual experience of the people doing the change. So what I mean by that is sometimes when you do hire a consulting company, they do bring in their junior people. These are people who are just out of college, maybe a couple years out of college. They've probably never worked anywhere else except this company. And they've really not been involved in any kind of change that would cause them to have experience. So they haven't been involved in a downsizing. They haven't been involved in an upsizing. They've never worked in a company other than a consulting company, which of course is still a company, but which they really have not really experienced any of those potential changes that working in a manufacturing company or a retail company could possibly bring to them. So that lack of experience, I think, can be an issue. Another issue or another red flag might be that the consultant isn't asking a lot of questions, and they're coming right to solution. So that they come in and you talk to them for a few minutes, and they think they know exactly what they need to do and how they need to do it. And so they stop asking questions and they just start giving you solutions. So I think that's also another red flag for me, anyway.
So that consultant might already have a canned product that they're trying to sell.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that brings
me to mind. And everything fits right into that model.
That's right. Exactly. Because, you know, when you're a hammer, everything's a nail, right?
Right.
So it's the same kind of thing. And that is another red flag for me, is that they only have one methodology. So they only know how to do one thing. And I don't want to pick on any company, but I'm just going to give you an example. So people that have been certified in, for example, Proshi, and there are others, you know, everything to them is going to be fit through that model. And the downside of that is that every change in some way is unique and needs a unique solution. And if you're just certified in a model and you don't really have that experience and you don't know about other models because you haven't studied it, then you're going to be potentially bringing a model to a change that doesn't fit. And so I think it's really important that if they come in and they say, well, we only do this model, you know, we only follow this methodology, that you really consider very strongly whether your change really does fit into that methodology. Because maybe it does, and then it's a good fit, but maybe it doesn't, and then it may not be a good fit. I think also a couple of other things about consultants is that when you ask a consultant about their success rate, that they can't tell you. So sometimes a consultant will say, well, you know, it's really hard to know how change management fits in with the success of the project. The project was successful, but they really don't have specifics. And I say that if you are really involved in a change, in an organizational change, and you have brought your change management skills to that, you should be able to relay to other clients exactly what you did that helped to contribute to the success of that change. Because you should be able to articulate what you did. You know, was it the pilot that you recommended, that they instituted, that made the whole difference? Was it the change handbook that you created for all of the sales managers so that they would be able to give a consistent message across the board? So there's lots of things that you can say as a change consultant about how you contributed to the success of that change. And if you have somebody who says, well, they can't really do that, that should be a red flag for you.
Well, and I would say, about talking about failure rates, that mm-hmm. any consultant that starts out with saying how 70% of change initiatives fail, so you should hire me to help you, they don't know what they're talking about, is what I'm going to say,
right.
Because
yeah.
they haven't done the research to know that, or they don't have the research to back up that figure, because as far as I know, there isn't really any.
Right. So that was something that
failure rate is a myth.
Right. Well, and also, you know, it was quoted, It was actually put into an article years and years and years ago. So I can't imagine that is the exact number that can sit, that, you know, continues all through the years. So that number is
right.
At least 30 years old. So I think, but to your point, you know, that to come in and sort of put that fear in your heart that, oh, you know, you have a 70% chance or whatever of that your change is going to fail, and that's why you should hire a consultant, you know, definitely show them the door. And I think also on the flip side of that is that if you have a consultant that comes in and says, I've never had a failure, you should also show them the door, because it's not possible in the law of probability that you've been
right.
involved in changes that have been 100% successful 100% of the time. Now, I say that my success rate, because I track my success rate, I say my success rate is 98%. But that 2% is really important, because that 2% was painful, but also a huge amount of learning came out of it. And I take those learnings and bring them into every change that I'm involved in. So I think it's important, and not to like go for someone who's 98 versus 95. I mean, I think it's important for people to know what their success rate is, but also to know what their failure rate is and what they've learned from their failures. So when I worked inside of a company and we were looking at change consultants, I would say to them, you know, what failure have you been involved in, and what did you learn from it? Because the failure is the failure, but what you learn from it is the most important thing, and to be able to take those learnings and translate them into better recommendations and better unique solutions for a company is what you're really, really looking for. So I would say those are some red flags when you're hiring a consultant. When you're in a company, I think some of the red flags, if you're on a project team, should be that there's no one person that's been designated as the person who's responsible for change management. And I say that because sometimes I see, especially a trend today, is that often the project manager is now the project manager / change manager. And I think it's unfortunate, because I think the skills to be a project manager and the skills to be a change manager are different in many ways. And I think it's hard to be an expert in both. And I always say, if you're in a company and you're on a project team and they're not putting someone in charge of change as their responsibility, that it's something that you need to bring up and talk about and say exactly, you know, what that needs to look like. And I think also another red flag for a company would be that there's no budging on the timeline if it looks like you need more time to implement. So sometimes the company will say, well, we need to implement all of this in 3 months, but you as a member of the project team think that it's only realistic to implement half of that in 3 months, and then maybe half of that in the next 3 months. And so the no budgeting, I think, is always, because I think it's important to be able to understand the business, yes, but also understand that there is a limit to what a company can implement in a period of time. And so I think it's that disconnect between what's possible and what's needed needs to come into play. So those are my two sort of big red flags for an internal. I think from a red flag perspective internally, I think it's always more complicated, because if you're just using an internal project team, which I think, by the way, is a great idea if it's possible, I think that sometimes everybody thinks someone else is going to do stuff around change. And what I always say when I go into work with a project team is, change is everyone's responsibility, but I'm responsible for putting together the plan and making sure that everybody in this room does what they're supposed to do around change. Because change really is, on a project, everyone's responsibility. And you can't have one person doing all the work, but you can have one person who knows a lot about change who can then help everyone else do what they're supposed to do. And I think that's the best, for me, that's the best model when it comes to implementing a change internally in a company, is
yeah,
to be able to.
If you have a consulting team that's in a conference room and they're putting everything together and building the plan by themselves without involving as many people as possible in the organization, that would be one of my big red flags. You've got to invite people in and involve as many people as possible, even, you know, give ownership, you know, if it's the consulting company that's owning the change management project instead of the people in the organization, that's a big red flag.
It is a huge red flag. And what's interesting about that red flag is that you and I might see it as a red flag, but often companies don't, because what they're so happy about is that somebody else is doing all of that, and then they don't have to worry about it. But what they don't realize is that when they abdicate that responsibility, they also sort of lose their connection to the change and to the people that are implementing it. And that's a huge issue, because your people are going to make or break your change. We all know that. Yet we do things like that where we say, oh, you know what, we're just going to have an army of change management people come in. They're going to do all the work. And when they leave, they take all of their work with them and all of their knowledge and all of the connections. So I once worked with somebody who said, well, I have my change management person, and, you know, he's a consultant, but he's here, and he's the only one that takes care of it, and he's the lightning rod. So if something goes wrong, we can, you know, say, oh, it's him. And I said, yeah, but he's now going around in the company creating all the relationships. When he leaves, what are you going to have? First of all, you lost your lightning rod, which I think is a terrible, another red flag, terrible, terrible process to use. But also, he's created all of the relationships in fixing the issues, in working out different ways of doing things, in taking the feedback and figuring out, you know, ways to change the process so that it really does work for the company. That all of that knowledge is in his head, not in anyone else's head on your staff. And when he leaves, all of that goes with him. So you either have to hire him as a full-time employee, or you have to figure out a different way to work,
or you lose
so that
all, right.
all that knowledge stays. I'm sorry.
Right. Or you lose all that information.
Yeah, yeah. And that,
okay,
I mean,
well,
that's a huge problem.
Yep. So let's flip it around and talk about good things. So what are the hallmarks of good change management?
Yeah. So I think for me, the hallmarks of good change management are really having, if you're hiring a consultant, really having one that really has good experience in being part of a change, both implementing and also being the subject of a change, so the changee, as I like to call them. Also, flexibility. I think really that whole idea of having a unique solution for you is really important. Change is not one size fits all, and I think it's always important to have an approach that's based on needs. And I think also another hallmark is pragmatism. So really this is about business, right? So it's about increasing the bottom line through effective change. And I think being able to balance that, so coming in and knowing that, yes, you as a change consultant might be focusing on the people side, but you have to work with the business to make sure that everything is balanced. And I think that being able to focus on both the business and the people is really what really makes good change management, that it's not skewed on one side or the other.
Okay. And I would add something we talked about before is that idea of having a lot of different models to
mm-hmm.
choose from and work with.
Yep.
And even building a new one by pulling different pieces of different things together so that
yep.
it will fit with what the organization is trying to do.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because that when people ask me which methodology I'm using, I always say I'm using the Beth Banks-Cohn methodology. And then they look at me and they think, wow, she has a methodology. And I say, what I do is I'm taking a little bit of this methodology because it really works here, and a little bit of this methodology, and a little bit of this methodology, and I'm creating one specifically for you and your change, because your change is unique and your solution needs to be unique, and there's no one methodology that fits every single change. That's why there's so many methodologies, and we need to be able to utilize them, to your point, in a way to have that knowledge so that we can do that, because you go in and create the Heather Stegall model for the same exact reason, because you're creating a unique solution to a unique problem. And to me, that's the best change management that you can have, is when you have a consultant, or internal or external, but you have a consultant that can really build the program that you need for your change to make it successful.
think your audio just went out.
My audio.
Or my audio? One of us.
I don't know. I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Okay.
It just seemed like it dropped for a second.
Ooh. Scary.
But we're fine now.
Okay.
So how can someone equip themselves to be a good consumer of change management?
So I think the most important thing is to be just that, a consumer. So when we go to look, you know, to buy a refrigerator or a car, you know, we do some research and we ask questions. We look around. We educate ourselves. And I think that it's important to do just that, to ask questions and then to pay attention to the answers and see if what the answers are things that are going to work for you. So to really be that educated consumer, you don't need to know a lot about change management, but you need to know enough to be a little dangerous, I think, and to be able to know that there are different methodologies. You don't need to know all of them, but to know that there are different ones, and to know that you want someone who's going to be able to come in and create that unique solution for you. You want someone that's going to be able to bring their experience with them, that they're going to be pragmatic, that they're going to have a success rate, they're going to know how they contribute to success, that they've learned from their failures. So all of those things make you a really, really good consumer.
So then on the opposite side of that, for those of us who practice change management, how do we make sure that we don't practice bad change management?
Well, I think, you know, be as educated as possible, not look at everything as, you know, fitting into one methodology, I think to me is the most important thing. If we could get all of the change management professionals out there to understand that there's more than one way to skin a cat, I think is really, really important. And I think that really understanding also when you go into a company, understand sometimes that they're going to demand things that could lead to bad change management and how to manage that, how to have the conversations with the companies that are hiring you or have hired you so that you can continue to contribute to the success of the project.
And I would add, be willing to say no to a project that isn't going to work because of the demands that the client has.
Yes, exactly. And I think you know, for those of us that make our living as a consultant, sometimes it's scary to say no. But I have to say, as a person who has said no at times when I really could use the money, I think those decisions are always good decisions. You have to trust your gut. You have to be able to really know if you're making a connection with the person that's hiring you and if they are going to be able to be your partner in implementing a really great project. Because if they're just going to want to throw things over the fence, that's not going to work for you as a change consultant. And I think it's important to know how to either have the conversation and get the company to alter the way they want to work, or to just say, you know, this project isn't really good for me, and I'm not going to be able to work with you. It's hard to do, but it's really important. I agree.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're almost out of time, so I'd like to ask you one more question, which is, where can people learn more?
So I know you're going to publish a blog after this that's going to have a link to a short article that I wrote called 10 Tips for Choosing the Right Change Management Consultant. So that's one place that they can go. And people could come to my website. I have lots of great information on my website and a really cute short animated short video right when you come in, which is really fun. And it's my website is AdraChangeArchitects.com, A-D-R-A, the word change and the word architects.com. And people are welcome to come and see what I have and check it out and get more information.
Start a conversation. All right. Well,
yeah.
Beth, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been wonderful. You know, I love to talk about change, so I'm always up for that. So thanks.
You're welcome. And coming up next month on Wednesday, October 28th, Rick Maurer returns to the show to share how to move people from grumblers to allies by using a tool that he calls the Energy Bar. Thank you for listening to the Influence Change at Work show. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events like the Fundamentals of Change Management Workshop, please visit enclaria.com. And while you're there, sign up for my monthly newsletter and receive 12 free templates from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Dude.